Greetings from Cranky Town. This is going to be packaging is the worst way to distribute software, except for everything else. And I am Ryan McKern. These days, I'm a release engineer at Puppet Labs. Maybe you've used some of our products. Hopefully you like them. Hopefully you're a customer. In a past career, I was a system administrator at MathWorks, makers of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software for those of you who listen to OnPoint. When I worked there, I was probably your customer, or at least evaluating one of your products. We bought a lot of software. Then we hired Adam, who now writes a lot of the software. I wanted to take a moment to set some expectations for you before we get going on this, since we're going to spend the next half hour or so watching me try to explain what I hope we all know to be obvious. E.B. White was an American author best known for his contribution to Strunk and White's The Elements of Style, or Charlotte's Web, depending on how much joy you have in your heart. Earlier this morning, Mike Stonkey talked to you about science and methodology. I'm here to talk to you about opinions. This presentation is built on top of strong opinions developed after years of working in technology, but they are opinions nonetheless. I'm going to focus a lot on Linux packaging formats because that's where I spend about 35 to 40 hours a week. And if I've omitted hating on your favorite platform, let me know. I will put it in a future version of this. So, if you look under your seat, you should find the big bucket of stones that I brought so we can start throwing them together. You ready? Distributing software sucks. Shipping new platforms is so hard. Cross-platform packaging is so hard. Unpredictable user spaces are so hard. Moving the packaged bits is so hard. Everything is so hard. And the reason everything is hard is because distributing software has a cost associated with it, and every one of those costs has an associated pain point. Everything is hard until people put effort and money into making it easy because computing is just organized sand. Once we make your problems easy, though, the solutions are often not cool anymore, and I think that's a big problem. In the old days, this was just how we built software. The configure, make, install dance works, but it's slow, it's laborious, and it's brittle. This didn't stop Gentoo from building a hardware burn-in test that they then disguised as a mostly working Linux distro, but it doesn't mean that it's something that I want to do for fun or profit. This is an important point that I think that we all lose sight of once in a while. The customer's time has value. And because the customer's time has value, we created packaging. Packaging was meant to save us from ourselves. And once package managers became a reliable, known quantity, then the time that it took customers to increment a software installation pushed further towards zero. It wasn't all the way there, but they got back their time, and they paid us for the favor. So what's great about packages, besides everything? The thing that I like the most about packages is dependency management. Dependency management and resolution is what separates us from smelly animals. And when it breaks, we're reminded that we're only one grueling yak shave away from those animals. The metadata included in a good package is invaluable, and a strong dependency chain is often part of that metadata. Another part of the metadata in a good package is a manifest of what it installed. When I was an admin, verification was one of the first things I did when a pager woke up my wife so that she could wake me up and tell me what had broken. Oftentimes, it was something as innocuous as root logging into my database server. That's not a big deal. That's not scary. And the first thing that I would often do is try to validate all of the packages. You could wrap that in a for loop pretty quickly with RPM and just iterate over to figure out what had changed and make sure nothing was crazy. I think that we should try to make that task easier for admins whenever possible. And while this isn't a replacement for a dedicated tool like Tripwire, it gets you a lot of the way there, and it lowers that barrier. I think distribution is another thing that packages often get right more than they get wrong. Being able to ship an installable artifact that can be retrieved from functionally anywhere and validated locally opens up tremendous potential for mirroring, which is how we distributed things before the Amazon S3 cartel put the mirror server industry out of business. The ability to easily mirror content puts a lot of power for explicitly versioning available packages into the hands of customers, and customers pay for power. There are some things that are not the best, though. That diagram, by the way, is an actual Debian process diagram. This is a fraction of it. That's a real thing. Content distribution is a hard problem, and HTTP is a mostly reliable transport mechanism at best. Sometimes you really do need something more complicated than just upload it to S3. Volunteer mirrors are one thing, but as sizes and network connections grow, sometimes you're going to need a dedicated CDN, and those aren't necessarily trivial. Key exchanging and key management is hard. It's too easy to do it wrong, and too long didn't read summaries are usually lacking. But unless something goes sideways and a key expires or is revoked, then it's generally a bootstrapping problem instead of an ongoing concern for your users. I chose to use a Debian package for this particular slide because, as was illustrated earlier during the MongoDB talk, Debian signing is wonky. It's weird. For instance, we sign the deb that we ship, but I didn't know that, and I've worked at Puppet Labs for a year. Conversely, Debian has distributed Puppet deb for a number of years and never signed it because Debian doesn't sign anything. Security is a joke. There are also a lot of different package formats that are conceptually all exactly the same thing. There's not really any huge difference between any of them. A lot of these formats vary only in their implementation details, and the complexity is eating us alive. RPM uses a different format than deb, which is different from a Solaris package, which is different than an OS10 package, ad infinitum. Keeping them all straight, specifically the shortcomings in the minutiae of each type, is hard because the human capacity for detailed memory is both finite and variable. So, there are as many package formats as there are people at this conference. And if we focused on all of them, it would be hilarious. But I'm only going to focus on the ones that are really popular. And by really popular, I mean the ones that I work with. RPM is the de facto format for Red Hat and all Red Hat-based derivatives. This means Fedora, CentOS, Scientific Linux, SUSE, OpenSUSE, and pretty much anything else that isn't based on Debian or using a port system. So generally sane distros. Using RPMs is easy. Building them is about as hard as building your own computer. It's mostly plug and play unless you want something really complicated like a liquid cooled dual graphic thing. I don't know, I have a Mac. It usually involves a lot of churn around keeping your build environment clean because it requires dependencies to be installed so that it can link against them. This is often simplified by using a tool like Mock, which is handily distributed in the third-party EPL repository. There's more advanced isolation tools than Mock, but I think that Mock hits a nice sweet spot between flexibility and features. Conversely, there is the Debian packaging format. It's complex to build, but it's very easy to use. It's the format of choice for practically everything based on Debian, which includes Ubuntu. They're probably going to rip it out and replace it with a mostly compatible alternative of their own devising at some point once they've migrated away from Upstart and replaced systemd with systemu or something. And it'll be awesome. It'll be great. Don't worry about it. The format itself predates RPM by a few years, and development between the two has been pretty parallel. Oftentimes, each camp has tread the same ground as the other without the map that the other side paved first. Building a deb package usually means calling deb build. That will then hand off to dpackage build package, which may or may not invoke dpatch. For best results, consider drawing a chalk circle first and then the blood sacrifice. If you get those two backwards or skip one, you're going to get a linking error. So, caveat audience. Isolating the software installed on the build root is often done using CowBuilder, which is similar to mock, but with more flailing of limbs and gnashing of teeth. The Mac package format has the same name as the Solaris package format, but it's completely different, and to one degree or another, its lineage traces back to NextStep. And being born of Jobs, the format itself is a little more complex than RPM or deb. It contains four files instead of three. One of them is a binary. To build a package, you use a tool called Package Builder, which is part of Xcode. There's no good mechanism for isolating build systems that I'm aware of. If you know of one, I'm all ears. But generally, we just re-image machines at the end of the build. Unfortunately, since there isn't a good tool, I don't have a snarky comment about there being something like mock for mock. See, it's the kernel name. It's a pun. There we go. One guy kind of got it. You might have noticed at the end of each of these package formats that shell scripts are the way you do things after you lay down the bits. They're maybe not the safest tool for post-installation scripts, but they're probably the best tool available for solving post-installation problems when you put the bits down, because that problem space has a huge number of weird, hairy corner cases. Shell isn't a good language to program in, but it's an excellent tool for manipulating things in arcane, weird ways. In general, I'm bummed out on shell scripts, but I recognize the need for what is basically a generalized low-level system automation tool built in by default, as opposed to the low-level system automation tool I sell. Then we come to the library managers.
Are you going to say more about that?
Shell scripts? Or the tool that I sell? I will tell you all about the tool that I sell afterwards. I would love to. Along those lines, there is a different kind of package, which is a library package that's often shipped by a lot of languages. These things are library managers with delusions of grandeur. They have a lot of quirks and hiccups, and the only real differences between them are the languages that they're written in, the amount of sanity checking provided by their implementation, and their willingness to try to install things arbitrarily into your home directory if you're not root. The drawbacks include the hoops of compiling native code on any node you need to install a native module on, and spending your $2.6 million initial seed funding round. So the truth is that we all have sacred cows like Sharkhives, Perl modules, Sharkhives, Gen2 e-builds, Sharkhives, and BSD ports of Sharkhive. I just had to draw the line somewhere because hating on software distributions this hard is exhausting. So, packages being the hairy ball of weirdness that they are, people decided to work around them because, you know, you see a problem, you can go through it or you can go around it. Sometimes you can go over it, but, you know, we'll take the long way. First among those is source tarballs. They're an okay way to distribute source code for package maintainers or for power users who want to recompile the build you labored over for weeks with -03-funroll instead of -02, but they're a poor way to ship software that you might actually want people to use. So I've been calling this technique curl bash, but curl shell and arg what why are acceptable names. The reasons for using this have become downright theatrically uninteresting to me, and they were always dangerous to users. So do you know why this server is sad? This server is sad because this is how you installed Node on it. Installing software like this is how we hasten in the future of Terminator or the Butlerian Jihad, and it will be a self-defense strategy by the mechanisms when we bring that future on ourselves. So, of course, we do this. In the interest of honesty, we used this technique as a possible option to install an agent and check in with a master on nodes that haven't been provisioned with an agent already installed. It's not my favorite way to solve this problem, but it worries me 80% less inside a network that I control than it does over the public web. It's not ideal, but if you don't trust your puppet master, what do you trust? So one of my favorite reasons not to use the curl bash technique is the unintended consequences of rolling your own installer from scratch. I don't really think it's any different than staring into the shining trapezohedron that you found in the attic of the abandoned church in Providence that one time on vacation. And asking your users to do that is irresponsible. There's a lot of assumptions that are often made in a curl bash installer. One of the problems that I think these assumptions introduce is that there's an attack vector of one opportunity versus every opportunity. An author named Taylor Hornby wrote about this a little bit in a recent post about commandments of release engineering and a further rebuttal that he did on Hacker News. I can provide the link afterwards. It's here in the presenter notes, where it does you no good. But he made a great defense of the shortcomings of having to hit a single URL, load balanced or otherwise, for every installation. The meat of his argument is that using GPG signed packages and detached GPG signatures lessens the surface exposure to basically a single opportunity for compromise. That only happens when you obtain the key. Once the key has been obtained through any means viable, then it provides the ability to distribute a key asynchronously from any signed artifacts. Users can then use the key to verify future artifacts with reasonable confidence that they haven't been tampered with. But if all you're doing is hitting a URL over HTTPS with no key validation of any sort, you're basically saying, I trust this server. That's good enough. I spent $14 on GoDaddy. It's got a cert. I don't care. Curl Bash outright forgets the fact that the whole world isn't broadband. Parts of America that say they're broadband aren't broadband. It breaks the classic pattern of mirroring releases far and wide due to its need for one true URL. There's a lot of ways around that, using DNS or load balancing, but it's still often a single point of failure. All someone has to do is get their hands on the domain name that you used for one true URL, and now they've got your entire installation mechanism at their control. Sometimes the amount of data that's passed down through a curl bash connection is irresponsibly large, and it can crush a slow internet connection, like a hotel wireless connection on the 17th floor. Throwing it out there. It also widens the attack surface by narrowing the surface area. And that metaphor doesn't work. It exposes you to a bigger attack area. Spooky, evil, bad people don't need to compromise your GPG key or your signing server or your SSL CA. They only need to compromise the backend that serves your shell scripts. If they only send out a compromised payload, one in every 10 requests, or one in every 100, then it may take you forever to find out what was done, because every time you try to read that script, good odds, you're going to see what you expect to see, and not what they're hoping to send you. And it totally ignores everything. Every curl bash installer is bespoke. That might work for suits, shoes, and coffee art. It's a bad pattern to follow for software installation. By their nature, these installers tend to overlook the inherent weaknesses of shell scripts and the fact that shells are often janky by design. What the press called shell shock, and I called shard attack, should hopefully underline how much trust you shouldn't put into a shell to do the right thing when you need it to. So along the bespoke lines, rolling your own security layer into your own installer is doubling down on the chance to ruin someone's day. The change to RVM was probably a good thing because they actually introduced key signing for their artifacts. But it violated semantic versioning guidelines and broke a lot of automation because there was no expectation that user interaction would be required to install it. While RVM was never explicitly SemVer, when you use a three-part version number, people tend to assume. There was a lot of developer stubbornness and a lot of rage quitting from RVM users. It was magnificent to read. I did it while eating popcorn. But it reinforces how much overhead is involved in rolling your own installer versus using toolkits that have already been peer-reviewed. So Omnibus is a tool made by Chef. They make things that I don't generally use. That's actually its logo. That thing's not even a bus. But Omnibus is pretty rad. I also think Test Kitchen is a great thing. And it'd be easy for me to hate on competitors, but I think that they solved a difficult problem in an interesting way. It still builds packages, which means that it has some gnarly dependencies under the hood. And it lets, but it lets a user define the entire dependency chain, basically down as deep as you can stand, and then wrap it up into a namespaced installable artifact that doesn't conflict or overwrite with existing system packages. Users like it, it provides value, so it's obviously got merit. But you ultimately still have to solve the problem of explicit dependency management, except now you're probably just going to write off the OS vendor entirely and vendor all the way down to and possibly even including libc. That's a lot of churn, and it might lead to some pretty serious sprawl if you're not careful about where to draw the line. The platform dependencies that it has on building packages is something that Chef acknowledges in the README, and they've got a test kitchen set up to work around that shortcoming. I don't think it's crazy because it's not that different from what we're doing in release engineering as a discipline, but it's different than what some people might expect if they've just been running RPM build against a bunch of local spec files on their machine. The last hiccup for using Omnibus is that its configuration format is Ruby. If you know Ruby, that's great. If you don't know Ruby, now you need to learn some Ruby to write a config file to use Omnibus to build some packages. But you already knew spec. So, what's the real win, aside from the namespaced artifacts? And also, being that it's Ruby, it can be very straightforward, or it can be insanely abstracted with all kinds of meta-programming weirdness. And if you see method missing in a config file, you drink. Before I move on, that knife is a real thing. The cutlery shop that I worked at actually had one. It weighs like 10 pounds. Every one of those attachments works. So it was an apt pick for FPM. I think it has the best real name ever, and the author, Jordan Sissel, is a hero. He's done some tremendous work on a tool called Logstash, and I think his entire modus operandi boils down to user empathy, which is great, and it's something I think we could all learn from. I emailed him about this talk, and I asked if there was a specific event that led to the creation of FPM. He talked a bit about how after working with native toolchains, which are universally obtuse, he began to notice underlying patterns that he could abstract. So he sent me about 2,000 words. I'm happy to give you the whole email because he doesn't insult me too badly in it or say weird things about my mom. But he's just telling us what we all know. Packaging sucks sometimes, and everyone knew it, so when Jordan tried to tackle that problem, people pitched in to help. There's probably a lesson there, and we should probably all try to learn it. But how often do you go to a Swiss Army knife to solve your problems if you had the benefit of planning ahead? It's usually the best tool for the job at any given moment when the job happens, but it's rarely the best tool for the job. You don't have to use all of the command line flags in FPM, but I do want to know what happens if you try, so make sure you live tweet that to me. I think it's probably the best tool to use if you're unable or unwilling to invest in a full packaging toolchain or pipeline for your products, and I think it's an excellent piece of software engineering. But I also think it trades configuration files for command line arguments, and it encourages a less rigorous approach towards what we ship to our customers. To be totally clear, that's coming from a place of love. When I was an admin, FPM saved me a number of days' worth of hours. I mean, just like 60, 70 hours in the course of a server migration by letting me package up things that otherwise would have had to be pulled down and pushed around manually. So, incredible tool, just not necessarily the best tool for the job. So why do we have so many alternatives? What went wrong to usher in this world of myriad package alternatives written in Shell or Ruby? RPM packaging can be tough. Spec files are weird. The format itself is bizarre. An RPM development split a while back, and development of the tool called RPM has been sort of weird ever since. The canonical development seems to happen from Fedora and Red Hat, but Jeff Johnson, one of the maintainers of RPM 5, has a fork that is used by Unity Linux, Wind River Linux, Rosa Linux, OpenMandriva LX, and OpenPackage. I don't know who any of those are either. In practice, everyone basically supports the spec up to RPM version 4, which is dicey. It pulls from a number of different places and gives you a lot of different options for doing the same thing three different ways. But Debian packaging is punishment. The development never forked, but that's probably because the Debian New Maintainer Handbook is 65 pages long, and it mostly just links to other chapters and other handbooks. I was going to make the same joke that Mike made about dev helpers not helping, but Mike stole it from me like a hack. But it's funny because all jokes have a grimy, fatal sort of truth to them. There's about 70 Debian helpers on any given box that you just install the basic development packages for, and they're all weird, weirdly documented, and oddly inconsistent. They're also all pretty brittle. There is also a conflation of purpose. A lot of library managers muddied the water by allowing users to install executable content alongside the libraries that they distribute. Suddenly, instead of just getting a library for you to include in your Ruby program when you install a Ruby gem, you're installing entire command line applications with backends of their own and no user-facing libraries for you to link into. Library managers also helped popularize the idea of namespacing entire runtimes into your home directory. That's an old practice, but it had fallen out of vogue for a while, and I'm sad to see it coming back, though I understand the appeal in a world of lockdown user permission and software that insists on storing its configuration in the same namespace where it's installed, like RVM. But I think at the end of the day that it's really all just a result of the fact that no one wants to solve the same problem all the time. We want to solve new problems. But we treat every inconvenience as a new problem instead of an extension of an existing problem. So we keep reinventing the wheel in one form or another. This one has spokes, but this one is solid, but they're still just wheels. I think that the more we work on things, the more we tend to lose perspective about who will be using our work. Distance from a project is good because it allows us to regain perspective. Our tendency as an industry is to treat our software projects like our babies and to never let them go, and then to smother them in their crib with our love. But treating them like our babies doesn't help us achieve distance from them, and distance is key for perspective. I don't think we need to keep solving packaging, and if we do, I don't think it needs to be a baby in bathwater situation like a lot of the alternatives are trying to propose. This is just a working hypothesis. It doesn't have a lot of meat behind it, but I think that this problem ultimately boils down to developer boredom and developer interest. If anyone wants to help me design an experiment to actually measure that, I'm all ears. I'm not good at science. I do words. This is a harsh truth that those of us who have to actually ship things to users need to accept. I haven't seen it put so plainly as this until recently, but as soon as I heard it, I realized this is what it boils down to when you want to ship bits to users. You don't know what's on the other end, you don't know what their machine will look like, and the best you can do is use tools that already exist to help you with that or extend those tools to make them better. So the too long didn't read on this is that packaging is mostly solved. If you're unwilling or unable to invest in a full packaging pipeline, then use FPM and just give your users packages. 80% of a tested, validated solution is better than 0% of fuck all, and you don't have to write it by yourself. Try not to forget the Pareto principle either, because, like I said, 80% of something is better than 0% of nothing. So I went through it a little bit faster than I intended to, because I hate these things a lot, and I just want to get them over with. If you made it through this, thank you. It was valiant. I'm sure the free popcorns made you all tired. If you have anything you want to say about this, anything that I omitted, any platforms you want me to hate on, let me know so that I can make fun of you on Twitter while I eat ice cream out of the bucket. All right, I see two questions. I'm going to go with the gentleman in the front first, and then I'll get the gentleman whose name I've already forgotten, even though I really liked your presentation. Caskey. So, you first, sir.
So, Debian's a lot more complicated than that. It's a mix of Perl and C in a badly documented format.
You forgot Shell.
Yeah, that goes without saying. And there's about 100 helper scripts that you have to invoke when you depackage build package.
Yep.
It's a lot worse than your presentation. I'm sorry.
So it wasn't really a question as much as an observation. I'll repeat it for the sake of getting it on the record. But Debian is worse than I made it out to be. I thought I would kind of softball it over the plate for them and not hate on them too hard, since we do ship packages for Debian that people pay money for. But yeah, you know, we can talk afterwards. We can commiserate. And Caskey.
I just wanted to make sure I was hearing you right. You're saying that you want people to join you in creating
Can we write it in Node?
Sure.
Done. Caskey mentioned that I'm apparently asking people to help me create a new package format from scratch, and I totally am. I think cults are great, and I've always wanted to lead one.
Well, is there Kool-Aid involved?
Is it a cult? Anyone else? Serious questions or trolling? I'm up for anything at this hour. Gentlemen in the back. Application packaging is a little, so I was asked if I could differentiate between system packaging and application packaging. By application packaging, do you mean library packagers, or do you mean like actually packing up an application to be used by a user?
Yep.
Okay. What's the application written in?
Java.
Java. How's the application served? Is it command line or is it a web application?
Web app.
Okay. What kind of a package are you proposing putting it in besides a jar? Okay, is this a sort of application that's going to be continuously deployed over the lifespan of the application?
Yeah.
You should probably be using a deployment tool and not a package.
Right. So do you pull it together from multiple sources and just acknowledge it as that, or do you take the whole thing and acknowledge that as a build package?
Your mileage may vary depending on what your infrastructure looks like. There is a web hosting company in Massachusetts called Acquia, who once famously billed themselves as the Red Hat of Drupal. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but it was hilarious. And they actually ship all of their Drupal installations as RPMs. They wrap them up using FPM, and they ship them all around using Masterless Puppet. It's janky, but it's also really fast and shockingly robust. Right. So again, to get that on the record, it was pointed out that one of the advantages of using a package manager for that particular use case is the benefit of things like audit trails and using an existing tool set. I absolutely do not disagree with that, and I think that's actually a strong use case for doing that. But if you're going to do that, I also think that your application, if it's not a command line application that stridently needs to be used in from user local or user, should probably be namespaced into its own place. I mean, there's nothing saying that you can't distribute an application using a native package format that just doesn't write into anything that Manhire7 would document. Gentleman one row up in the gray shirt, I think you had a question, or have I bored you? Give me a second to try to figure out how to condense that to get it on the mic. The question was something along the lines of, if you have a robust, mature tool chain already set up, where do you draw the line between using library managers versus system packages that you could make yourself? Did I re-articulate that well enough? Okay, so language-specific package managers versus native packages.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, it's a matter of opinion. I think that if you need a more up-to-date version of a language than what is shipped by the vendor, then maybe you have a responsibility to package and maintain your own build of that language. And if that's the case, you can use the native library package manager. If that fits your use case, if you want to invest in the tooling and the overhead to manage that. Otherwise, if you're already building your own language, go all in. Build your own gems using RPMs. I don't think one is necessarily better than the other, but I do think one is one less place to audit. Gentleman in the back. To repeat that and get it recorded, Netflix loves everything I said. They love packages, and I think I was just offered a job. I'm flattered. Anyone else? Far, far back.
Do you have an opinion on package post-installed scripts, and would you also say that those should
No, I honestly think that package... I was asked if I have an opinion on package post-install scripts and if I think that they should live in Puppet. At the risk of going serious and professional for a second, I actually think it's more responsible to have that as a part of the RPM artifact itself. Any work that you need to do afterwards in Puppet runs the risk of being disconnected from the package. So if someone updates that package and fixes whatever shortcomings you were working around in Puppet, but they don't document that and the risk is high, then you're always going to have this weird post-installation step afterwards that might work, it might not, it might break things, it might not. It's better to keep those linked by actually tracking that in the spec file that you roll the RPM file from, or in the scripts that you roll the deb from, or whatever other awful arcane format you might be using. All of that work should also be checked into revision control, so you'll still have a rolling change log of how those things were updated. But anytime you try to manage that kind of... post-installation janky hackery in a configuration management tool, it always leads to sadness down the road. Anyone else want to hop on the dog pile about what's terrible about packaging? I mean, this seems like it's been fairly cathartic for some of you. All right, great. You're all awesome. I cede the floor.